堂听 class.com。
The folks from SoftBank talked to us and said, you know, how long would it take to put together a network of 250,000 users, 5 million messages? We said, a few days, maybe a week. And we did it with the help of Compaq. And I'm very, very proud of that. If you take a look, we made a mistake, though. It's, in fact, 1.85 million messages a day because of what you guys are doing, which I think is incredible. What I want to do in this hour is take you through all the things that you can do with networking, the promise of networking, and some of the exciting things that are going on in the industry. Now that I've been at Novell for a while, Novell has a much more sharpened focus. We're trying to balance new technologies with our existing customer commitments of one kind or another. We're managing the complexity of applications, all the kind of problems that everybody here deals with, and we're planning with our customers their long-term information technology strategy. So we have a renewed focus at Novell to deliver the kind of technologies that people need to run their networks. That's what we're all about. My talk is actually about the new face of the network. Now, the new face of the network is not an interface. It is not even a single face. The new face of networking has a human face. And it has as many faces as there are users on the network today. When we take a look at everything we've done in the last 15 years, we've been governed by Moore's Law. And it's been a good law for all of us. It's the thing that created Comdex and made this as fun as it has been. And we're now moving to a situation where we're governed much more by the speed of light. But I think, in fact, that's not the ultimate constraint. I think it's the speed of people's minds. I think it's the ability of organizations to deal with the complexity and creativity that networks bring to them. That solving that problem turns out to be the most important thing we can do. That we need adaptive systems that can work with this set of problems. Now, the industry that we're in is young. It moves fast. We deal with time compression and globalization. We're very proud of what we have accomplished. But what we're seeing now is a declining significance of Moore's Law and an increasing significance of the problems that I'm going to highlight. They ultimately become the barrier to progress. In other words, the scarcity here is of time. Time of the person, time of the customer, time to change these new models. That's the opportunity that's in front of us. Now, how big is this? Well, there's a lot of interesting statistics. The size of the web, there are roughly 71.3 million web users, according to IDC right now, and 130 million are expected by the year 2000. The compound growth rate of these things yield, you know, just tremendous tremendous numbers. We've often said that at the current growth rate, every human on the planet would have their own website by the year 2004. But if you look at the number of trade shows we have to go to, every human on the planet will have their own trade show by the year 2004. It just goes on and on and on. And there's an underlying transition here from static to dynamic. And that shift is something that underpins almost everything we do. And it's not obvious until you begin to think about its implications. Because the internet and networking technology are bringing forth a whole new set of mediums. There's a number of examples. What computers can do that we really couldn't do before is, let's just call it creative pattern matching. It can watch what you do, it can figure out what you want, and it can suggest the next thing. I don't know if you've noticed, but Amazon.com, one of the services that I use on the net, now remembers your books and then makes a suggestion based on a perception algorithm for books that you want to buy. When was the last time your bookstore did that to you? There are lots of examples of this. American Airlines has a program now where for a certain category of customers who buy through electronic means, they can give you instantaneous price updates so that you can absolutely know the marginal price of that middle seat that you didn't want anyway. On and on and on, we see computers are being used not just as substitutes for the physical world that we're used to, but in very different ways. And it's, this whole thing is governed by a set of laws around network effects. Now, if you look back, we can see network effects that were a surprise to us 20 years ago. Most of us spend most of our time traveling around and dealing with the United States airline industry and the hubs that it has created. When the airline industry was deregulated, what was the competitiveness equation? Of course, it was the domination of hubs. That's a network effect. The more people you can get into one hub, the more you can make sure that they stay in your network. The same principle applies in what we do. And technology adoption is driven by laws of increasing returns. When the first fax machine came out, it wasn't very useful. But when lots of people had them, all of a sudden, everyone else had to have them. When the first cellular phone came out, the same argument applies. These mass waves are driven by brands, and people are often confused by how absolutely crazy these markets are. One year, you're a failure. The next year, you're a billionaire. Back and forth and back and forth. Happens all the time, right? We all understand this. You announce a new product in a week, you have a million customers, and boom, you go public. Then, of course, you have to get the revenue later. Ubiquity first, revenue later. That's what URL stands for. My central thesis here is that there are two intertwining issues. The human face of networking is interactive and changing. It's that interactivity, the network knows you, the intelligent network model, and that the adoption of technology is driven by increasing returns. The two together make our world extraordinarily dynamic and fascinating and very, very competitive. If you follow the new face of networking idea, then every face is different, and everyone's needs for networks are different. Every person on the network has a different perspective. And so the world of me is really about millions of new faces coming on the internet which have their own unique interests, which we see all the time, much to our surprise, but it should make sense, right? Networks are empowering. When people think about computers, they really think about themselves, and they think about what they can achieve. This technology and the industry that it is making is an incredibly personal one. And it's driven ultimately by the desire for intrinsic recognition that we all have. And people want this stuff now. We're busy building these worlds. And we're building in cyberspace replicas of our physical space. So, for example, it shouldn't surprise you that there are saints and criminals on the net. We have to have banks put your money. You have to have churches where you can pray for support on the net. You know, it makes sense that we're building all of these new models. So in the middle of this, we have our chief information officer who has enormous challenges. And in this new role that I have, I've spent a lot of time talking to them. And the problem that they have is that they more or less had it wired like 10 years ago when they understood what everybody was doing. But what's now happening, here we have a notion of a software distribution company to a distributor, that's the truck, to a CIO, that's the gentleman, to the user, that's the lady. And what happens is she now goes directly using the net over to the software manufacturer. You say, no big deal, I do that all the time. The problem is, at least from a corporate perspective, not necessarily for at home, but from a corporate perspective, this is a serious problem because of support, asset management, legal use issues, and the most important one being security. The problem that you have to have is you have to have a solution which works politically within the organization, that the lady who is the end user has to feel empowered, but the CIO has to be able to set up a framework. So the correct way to think about this is that the services will evolve so that this end user will have permission granted through a set of directory-enabled solutions that allow her to get access to the things that she cares about. The CIO won't stand in the way, but he'll make that happen. And the CIO then has to embrace a view of the network that enables that. Now, the CIO says, what I really want is a network where I have a command central, a place where I have asset management, software distribution, bandwidth, managing web access, security policies, those kinds of things. And the end user has a very different view. They want it all now. It's the world of me. They want to make it happen. The key strategies in all of these spaces are to use directory-enabled services to make those solutions available and then give the end users and the CIOs the power to make those choices. There's this enormous data explosion going on at the same time. The World Wide Web, HTTP, Java, etc. have made it so easy to publish any kind of data and deliver new application. Web traffic is increasing at roughly 30% every 3 months. God knows what they're doing. The World Wide Web traffic is approximately 31 terabytes per month, and the current expectation is that it will grow at least a factor of 100, which I looked up, it's 3 petabytes, which is a really big number per month. Trust me. Now, you should expect that because of the latency inside of organizations, you'll see really innovative things first on the web, and then they will move into corporations because of end-user demand and so forth. So the web is this tremendous cauldron of innovation, which has awakened us from this sort of networking conundrum that or problems that we've had for so long. And it turns out that because of the interaction with the world of me, there's an issue around being close to things. It turns out that when you build these data networks, the most important thing is to have perceived proximity. You have to absolutely have the data close to you. The technical solution for that is called replication. And what you do is you replicate caches and you make all that stuff work. By doing so, the network has to learn the person's identity so they know who you are. Ultimately, then, the architecture that underlies these networks is built on a set of caches. A cache in the sense of a place where you keep local copies, and then complex algorithms that keep the caches up to date. Because we all know that the computer performance and the demand from end users is outstripping the ability for enterprises to deploy bandwidth that they need. The combination of the two makes a great deal of sense. As an aside, we have a product called Border Manager, which handles approximately 50,000 concurrent connections and 5,000 pages per second to do caching and proxy analysis. The equivalent NT and Unix versions are 1/10 of those. That's an example of the kind of sweet spot that you can find when you look around in these networks of all of these different devices. So we find ourselves living in a world that's very different from what we thought. I thought actually we were going to have a situation where we were going to have a series of tiers, first tier, second tier. But in fact, what's occurring is that the ISPs that we so much depend on are interconnecting, which is great, a good thing. And by doing so, they're in fact building a whole new network. One of the things that's happening is that the TCP/IP technology that's now becoming the basis for the world's data networks is also suited for voice. And although today the percentages of voice and data are roughly equal to first approximation, the expectation is that in the next 7 years, in some analyses, the percentage of data versus voice will go down to about 1% voice. So that gives you an idea of how significant this change is. Why does this matter to us? Because this is a deregulated world. It's an example of an inversion. Just when you thought you understood exactly how everything would be priced in a P x 64 pricing architecture, which God decided in the CCITT blah 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 20 years ago, now all of a sudden we have an opportunity to change it again. I don't know how that will change it, but I know that it will affect a $650 billion industry. Reed Hunt is a friend and former FCC chairman said, and you'll love this, what we need a high-speed, congestion-free, always reliable, friction-free, packet-switched, big bandwidth, data-friendly network that is universally available, competitively priced, and capable of driving our economy to new heights. Makes sense to me. And by the way, we're building it. We together. Put another way, what we need is we need a data network that can easily carry voice instead of what we have today, which is a voice network struggling to carry data. By the way, yesterday, AT&T announced WorldNet, a virtual private network service, with a business quality IP offering. It's an end-to-end service guarantee. It enables remote access to LANs, extranets, intranets, that sort of thing. It brings down a huge complexity barrier for all of us as customers, and it uses a protocol called RADIUS, R-A-D-I-U-S, to authenticate into a directory, happens to be Novell's NDS. Pretty neat stuff. It's happening, and it's happening very quickly. There's a tornado happening, and this tornado is this change from this adoption of IP. I call this an intelligent network. I talked about it. This as a replacement. In that model, the subnets that you've built for so many years will die and be replaced by these interconnected TCP/IP networks. For us at Novell, MOAB, the next version of NetWare, is the key part of our strategy, because that version of NetWare uses IP completely natively, and all the services that U.S. customers, to the degree there are some customers here in the room, all those services that you know and love and that have been best of class will now be available on these open interconnected networks with extraordinary performance, much higher performance than any of the other competitors in those spaces. That's the commitment that we've made, and it's in beta today. Now, just saying TCP/IP, which appears to be a mantra in our industry, is not sufficient. It turns out that what's important is that you have the base case, which is TCP/IP, and then all these services which run on top. The enabled services turn out to be the differentiator. In a situation of open interoperability, everybody has the same stuff. How do you differentiate? In our case, it will be to make this tornado be worth something to your business. Don't be afraid by the destruction that the tornado means. Ultimately, it's a much better model. The other issue that people are struggling with is a set of border or firewall issues. And what's happening is that as people are building these networks, there's huge issues around security and access and those kinds of things. And what the original model that we pushed on 3 or 4 years ago was that there was going to be this firewall. And there was the intranet. That was where the good guys are. There was the internet. That's where the bad guys are. And then there's the firewall, which is the Dr. No. It says no to everything. Problem with that, of course, is it's an extraordinarily inflexible architecture. It's not the correct technical approach. What you, in fact, need is about 45 shades of gray. Because our customers, and I suspect most of you, are trying very, very hard to interconnect your customers, your suppliers, with different levels of service. Some are friendly. You know, you're going to deal differently with your customers and your partners than with your competitors, but you may even collaborate with your competitors some. You need this different approach. The point here is that security should be a business decision for you all. IDG, after we announced Border Manager, as another plug for that, said, with initiatives like Border Manager, Novell is for the first time truly repositioning its core competencies strongly within the internet space. So you have an opportunity here to drive a very, very different and powerful ISP model. The internet service providers have all the border, all the caching, and all the security and all the naming issues that I'm describing. So a combination of solving the ISP problem and the caching problem and the access and security problem turns out to be a huge sweet spot for all of us to drive literally right through. Mixing metaphors, you get the idea. And we've heard a lot about thin clients, and they're a lot of fun. There's this thin client and that thin client, and then there's the, well, there's not so thin clients, and then there's the fat clients. I bet you all didn't know you had a lot of fat clients when you bought them. If you take a look, it's actually happening. People are, in fact, expecting over the next few years to build a lot of non-PC devices. And it's very clear to me that one size no longer fits all. But I don't think it's going to be either or. It's clearly going to be a mix. You want the promise of the network computer for a lot of the reasons that we've talked about, but you also want to use your existing investment. So perhaps a better approach is to NC your PC. And in order to do that, there's a set of services that you need. In particular, you need a directory service that can keep information and hold the state somewhere else than in your fat client. By moving the complexity from the PC client into the network, you can pull that off. From our perspective, NetWare is the perfect model to do this. It has the dedicated performance and the scalability to handle many, many different devices and the right platform for directory-level kinds of things. What's happening in this whole initiative is people are beginning to develop applications, and this is, to me, incredibly important. The whole Java phenomenon, I'll talk about that in a few minutes, is creating a new sort of network architecture. These are applications which are distributed by design, a little different from what we use today, multi-user by need, geographically dispersed by necessity. They derive value from using a thin client, and they often include workflow. Now, if you take a look at the players in the industry pushing this, Oracle, for example, has something called NCA, which is really data in the network. Sun calls this Java computing, of course. Netscape calls this Netscape ONE, Netscape One, really web computing. IBM calls this the Open Blueprint, also network computing. Novell calls this an open solutions architecture. Microsoft has named this the Gang of Five and feels it's a conspiracy. I prefer to think of it as being right. This initiative around building these new category of applications is one that all of us can play in and really does match to the model that our customers and everyone's customers are really driving for, to move to this 1990s, year 2000 kind of model. If you take a look, for example, in PC ownership, and you've heard these TCO arguments for years, and they never seem to get solved, we've been analyzing this, and guess what? It turns out that the majority of the cost of PC ownership is the management of them. And you might say, well, just don't manage them. The problem is that isn't a rational answer for most corporations, although for folks in this room who are very sophisticated, perhaps. The important point here is that that's a big opportunity for us in the industry to attack. That's where the majority of the leverage really is. So what we're doing then is we're building what I'm going to call a digital persona. Each of the phases that you see here in my chart, your identity is known. You as an individual, your identity is known to people and to devices and services and applications, each of the four layers that I just pictured. What makes up your identity is your relationship to things. By doing so, you have a place in the hierarchy. You're identified by your company, your geography, your department, and yourself as an individual. And you interact with things in the network world differently depending on which department. And I know you say to this, well, isn't this obvious? It's obvious to us as humans, but our computers don't do it. Our computers are authenticated to the machine, not to you. So the solutions that we build, and the solutions that indeed Novell is building, are based on this notion of the digital persona, that you get inalienable rights when you get yourself installed into the network. From the technology perspective, you get access to services, you get, you know, through routers, you have modem banks, all those other kinds of things. And the important thing is that you can authenticate to the person using the technologies that I'm describing. And you can end up in a where the network knows you. So start thinking about, here's an example, start thinking about when a new person joins your organization, what's their life like? So what I thought I would do is, in fact, take you through that a little bit and describe what happens when the network knows you in this case. And I want to demonstrate how world might work. And what I'd like to do is ask three people who work at Novell, J.D. Merrimy, Kent Prowse, and Gary Hine, to join me on stage. Come on in. Here they are. Where's J.D.? There he is. And these gentlemen, by the way, are known as the Three Amigos.
Thanks, Eric. When Eric asked us to do this demo, he only put a couple of requirements on it. The first one is he wanted to demonstrate all the technologies he talked about. The second one, he says, have a lot of fun. And the third thing, he says, remember that reviews are coming up. So the demonstration that we put together today is deceptively simple, and yet it is extremely powerful. What we've decided to do is we're going to take two perspectives of this technology. The first perspective is from the administrator, played by JD over here, and the second perspective is going to be played by Gary over here. And the idea that we wanted to portray to you today is this one of a digital persona. And the fact that by a single user create, we can in fact expose this digital persona. So we took a little bit different tact on here, and we decided, what would happen if there was a new CEO inside a Novell?
You didn't tell me you were going to do this. You were going to pick somebody out of the audience.
We're getting used to it now. No. So much for that review. JD, you know, in this world, exposing this digital persona is kind of like, you know, you've got all of these different technologies. You've got email, you've got database access, you've got file and print, you've got groupware, you've got application management, you've got software distribution, you've got all of these things. And from the administrator's perspective, JD, what's it like to administer all this stuff?
Well, as an administrator, I'm responsible for thousands of workstations, hundreds of different sites, constantly trying to integrate new technologies into our existing systems with our existing infrastructure. Making all these systems work together as a solution is extremely difficult usually, but adding a new user to our company used to require coordination between half a dozen network administrators, each of whom was responsible for a piece of a complete enterprise solution. What I'm going to do though is I've got all these issues now distilled down to a single user create. So what I'm going to do is we're going to go ahead and create Eric now.
You're going to be exposed.
I'll be much kinder.
We're going to expose your digital persona.
Now, this is a flashback to yesterday when Eric got his badge. What's your last name? Dr. Schmidt. And I'm going to one template that's going to create everything. And in addition to that, we're also going to allow him to get access to email over web. So I'm going to put a password in for that so it's at least somewhat secure over the Internet.
Now, what you're telling me is that while this is happening, you're setting up this digital persona in the entire enterprise network.
Yes, I am. As a matter of fact, there I go. Now I've actually got him set up to do things like access to his workstation, access to email, access to the Internet, or limited access to the Internet, depending on how I want to govern that, access to the Netscape Enterprise web server, even access to file and print services both on NT and on network.
Wow. Well, let's come over to our new CEO. It'll be played by Gary. Gary, how does this affect you?
Well, you know, I'm a CEO, not really a computer geek. Well, maybe a little bit. So, you know, I really don't care about operating systems and protocols. And, you know, I really just need to have applications and a desktop to do my job. So, really, I want to come to Novell my first day of work. I want to log in one time and have access to all the resources I need to do my job, regardless of what platforms those happen to be hosted on.
Well, JD created your account over there, Eric. Why don't you log in here? You've got an NT workstation that's got the network client, and that's it. So why don't you log in, and let's see what happens.
Looks like I got into my NT workstation, got through the desktop, and it's pausing a little bit, but it should probably start to pull down some information here. What's happening here?
Well, JD, from your perspective, what did you do to Eric?
Well, NT Workstation is a secure desktop. I mean, the user's got to have a password before accessing the workstation. What I'm doing is providing a single sign-on to the NT Workstation, creating the user an NDS, actually granted the user rights to his desktop, in this case, Eric, saving me, the administrator, the work of manually creating the workstation account on that particular machine. The benefit to Gary is, Eric, because he didn't need a second password to get into that system. Now, before Gary can start to do his job, though, Eric, I'm getting the switching thing mixed up here. He needs applications on his desktop. So the directory knows who Gary is, actually, and we're using this information to install and configure software that Eric needs to do his job.
Wow, it looks like everything came down. You know, your bitmap is the new corporate bitmap, and I know that you're the CEO, but even at that, I doubt you could even change this bitmap.
I know NT. It's easy for me to change this. I just go into properties, click on properties, and I can change, well, nothing really.
So I guess we know who really controls all this stuff.
What happened? I don't understand.
Well, with applications, because you're known in the directory, we can actually configure applications in your desktop and everything with information from your digital persona that is stored in the directory. Well, it looks, Gary, like Eric, like your communicator was downloaded there. Why don't you start that up and let's see what kind of work you can do.
You know, before I do that, you know, of course I can do a lot in GroupWise and Oracle and so forth, but I really need some more applications down on my desktop. In fact, I know we just purchased a lot of licenses for some productivity apps, so I'm going to ask my administrator, JD, why don't you set up some more applications on my desktop here?
No. Oh, sorry, I got caught up in the administrator role. Just a second, let me add them in. We're going to go and add in a couple applications here to Gary. Now, not just to Gary, though. All the anybody that happens to be in that part of the tree will also get access to these applications. So put in Access, PowerPoint, Word, those kind of things. And just with a couple of clicks, I've actually delivered availability for those applications down to Eric's platform.
Well, I think the first place I'll start today in my new job is I'm going to bring up Netscape Communicator and start browsing the web like any good employee.
Now, this is me. This is not a good reputation.
Well, you know, before, of course, I can do any work, I need to customize my computer, my application, so it understands my identity, my persona. So what I'd like to do is I'd actually like to come in here and configure my preferences in this Netscape Communicator with my information, my identity. Well, hey, it looks like it's actually already there. My email address is already in there, and my name. How did that happen? This application isn't necessarily NDS aware.
Remember that we bring this information down. We go and read your digital persona, and we can customize any application as it's distributed to the desktop to match your exact needs.
Interesting. Well, let's go out and let's start browsing the web. Now, you know, we have a little issue being from Utah, and our engineers are relatively frustrated and spend a lot of time out on the web. And I've asked my administrator over here to make sure that this doesn't happen any longer. So of course I'm going to go out to see if he's actually doing his job here, and go out to Playboy, you know, just for the articles. And hey, wait a minute. Looks like I couldn't get in for some reason, although I used to be able to get in. I mean, users used to be able to get in here.
Well, Eric, I think what's happening is that the network knows you. In fact, it probably knows you a little bit too well. JD, however, why don't you explain to the new CEO why this happened?
Sorry, I forgot I was supposed to deny everybody but the CEO. My mistake. Border Manager makes Internet access actually manage that kind of management simple. I just create a couple of rules that control access to content on the web, such as non-productive sites like the one that Eric just hit. Once again, the directory manages who these rules affect. So Gary, instead of sitting around browsing the web, let me give you a URL from the new online real-time sales database. And of course, since now you're a user in your email system as well, I can email this to you. And we'll just say new URL, sales.novell.com.
What's that? Now, I spend a lot of time on the road, and, you know, I'd like to access my email anywhere. I don't always have a connection to the phone system, believe it or not, but I always will have a connection to the Internet. So I'm going to actually go in and access my email right out of my web browser. So let me go ahead and just log in here.
Now, the URL that I sent Gary points to an application running actually on a Netscape Enterprise server running on Novell's network produced by Novonix. This application is actually running server-side JavaScript that natively connects to our Oracle sales database.
Well, so let me go ahead and go in the URL here. Wonderful. This looks like the front end to our new Oracle database. And let me go ahead and, of course, I'm very concerned with sales. So I'd like to go ahead and check sales for a couple of the different regions across the world here. Now, it looks like North America is a little bit behind their quota.
Is that where the Amigos hang out?
No, they're mostly in Australia. So let me go ahead and take a look. We're a little bit low, so what I want to do is I want to check on which of our sales reps in the North America region and how close they are to their quota so I know who to, you know, ask.
Is your name in there? Oh, you're the CEO.
Here we go. So what's basically happened at this point is I've used a standard web browser, talked to my Netscape Sweet Spot server that's running the Java server-side scripting that talks natively to the Oracle database hosted on the InternetWare server. And of course, I can go through and browse the sales figures from any web browser anywhere in the world. Now, this is wonderful. Everything I needed to do, my job, happened the very first day. I came in, I logged in, everything just seemed to work. You know, JD, you've done a terrific job.
Thank you.
Reviews are coming up. Well, JD, I also noticed that one of the requirements that we put up there was access to that one operating system. Oh, MT. And I was just wondering, he had access there. How did you do that?
Well, it's pretty straightforward, actually. Let's go ahead and add him into another domain. I can manage my domain information now using NDS for MT in NDS. I'm going to go in and take Eric's account. With that single create, we actually gave him access to a domain already. And to add him into another domain, it's just a matter of choosing what I'm interested in. In this case, we'll go into the Seattle domain.
Remember, he's the CEO. You don't want to tell him no.
And that's how simple it is to actually manage user access to NT domains now using NDS for NT.
Wow. Well, just to summarize, as you can see on this slide, the challenges that we are faced with on a daily basis are both from the user's perspective as well as the administrator perspective. They need access to applications. We need to be able to manage the desktop. We have groupware needs and email. We need access to the internet. We need to be able to control access to the internet as well. Database access to do our jobs and also file and print. And what we've demonstrated to you today, hopefully successfully, is this idea that when a user is created, this digital persona is also created. And based on the information you put into the directory then manages that relationship and provides you with the ability to get access to the information with you, that you need. Well, folks, this is for real. None of this was fake-o-matic. Today you can stop by any one of Novell's connecting points and try this yourself. And this is a lot of the technology that we used to put the connecting points together. With that, we'll turn the time back to Dr.
Okay, good. Thanks. Okay, thanks, Gary, also known as Eric. Thanks, Ken.
Okay, good.
Thanks, JD. Mm-hmm. The important message about that demo was that those are shipping products, with the exception of one, which is the Netscape web server from our subsidiary called Novonix, which ships in beta next week in Thanksgiving, downloadable from the net at www.novonix.com. Pretty amazing. A long departure from what many of you think Novell really, really, really is doing. The important point here is there's a much broader story about what we can do. If you take a look, the current start of our networks, the human face is wrapped up in wires. It's enormously complicated. The average number of directories that a person in a Fortune 500 company is in the Fortune 500 company is about 120. We at Novell took our eye off the ball, but now we have a solution for all of this. We have distributed network services in the mid-tier. That's what the MOAB and network stuff is all about. A platform for management of these services. That's the directory, our ManageWise product, et cetera. And a new and renewed attractiveness to the developer community. Now, the directory simplifies because of one of the most fundamental principles in computer science, which is that every problem can be solved by one level of indirection. And what we've done is we've essentially taken all of the complexity that you all deal with every day and put it in a place which is in the network. It's that intelligence. It's replicated. It's cached. And it's an area we have a significant competitive lead. The Aberdeen Group just wrote that NDS for NT, the same product running on NT, even obviates the need for Microsoft's Active Directory, which is good because it doesn't exist yet. And what people are doing is they're doing user account management, desktop and network management, collaboration and application management are all made possible through this model. So in the demo, what you really saw is the principle that we call application redirection. The old-timers here know that Novell made its name because of DOS file redirection, a unique skill within the company. By bringing out a set of libraries and services that are on the wire protocol compatible with everybody else, we can now take all the applications that you use and have all this happen without your user intervention or systems administrator intervention. That second phase is a huge change in the way you all use networks. By delivering this common access management security framework, you don't need to rewrite your app. You get all sorts of benefits, shared data, less hardware, everything's more secure, more fault tolerant. The total cost of ownership solutions, we've got, you know, white paper after white paper from the marketing folks giving you all the data, is just incredible. I think it's intuitively obvious how strong that stuff really is. And by the way, we're going to do it for NT, NetWare, and also for Unix. Java is also part of our strategy, for obvious reasons. To give you an idea of how well Java is doing, Java today is very much a huge success. There have been more than 1.1 million downloads of the JDK 1.1. There are IDC says there are 450,000 Java programmers with 700,000 projected for 1998. This is for language which is 2 years old. There are 800 books showing where the real revenue is. There are 400,000 websites using Java. There are more than 1,000 applications shipping. And at the Java One conference in March, there were approximately 10,000 attendees. This is a very, very significant phenomenon in our landscape. Now, to date, 87% of the application development has been on the client. And that's where you have all the fun. That's where all the battles over who controls what and who adds this library and the lawsuit and so forth are really being fought out. But people are missing the real story behind this. The real opportunity for Java will turn out to be when it's implemented on the server. Middle tier, remember there's the middle tier where a lot of the competition goes on in networks today, is where server-side Java will take off. We call this, again, the intelligence in the middle. It's very powerful. By very nature, that tier is not dominated by any single monopoly. There's lots of different choices. They're not going to go away. Customers have lots of complexity problems. And so server-side Java plays to one of Java's strongest suits, which is platform independence. Faster performance, portability of applications. It has the right architecture to build these new network-aware applications. Now, and this, of course, is part of our strategy. Now, it's incredibly important that the APIs in the industry not get split. And if you read sections 2.6 and 2.8 of the contract, you can form your own opinion about what 117 licensees have all agreed to do. Java, then, is more than a dancing bear on your website. It's really, I like to think of it as an approach to modern living, but in practice, it's at least the language of electronic commerce. And where are we in all of this? Well, the Java language really will replace C and C++, and the 100 million JVMs that are out there really are an enormous asset for universities, new language development, and things like that. Key computer companies, key software companies, companies like Novell, universities, etc., are going to build new dedicated platforms that use Java to provide new value. And those dedicated platforms will eventually needs to be underscored, become major platform players in our industry. And it'll take a while because of applications and robustness and things like that. Java on the server will be platform independent, and of course the client depends a lot on how the litigation plays out and things like that. And the technical issues will be fixed independent of the battles between Sun and Microsoft. So the future for Java breaking into the mainstream turns out to have this server component and an incredibly scalable JVM on the server, in our case one that is going to be probably two higher in performance than its competitors, is in fact a key part of that value proposition going forward. So to put all of that, let me go one forward here. To put all that into place, what we've done is we've got an architecture that solves the final piece of the problem. If you take a look at the architectures I mentioned earlier, they tend to be client or applications category specific. They're all important, by the way, but they're missing a component, and the component that they're missing is the component that provides them the manageability and the distributed Java solutions, the kinds of things that underlie the demo that you saw. And so by bringing out something which we call the Open Solutions Architecture, we can deliver the back end of the services that make this whole value proposition happen better than anyone else. The key is to build an infrastructure that is targeting at network developers and ISVs. And then, of course, we can provide the complete management infrastructure on top of them and make the rest of this stuff work. So we, of course, are building all the pieces. This is a diagram which shows you each of the different layers, and I know it's a busy slide. The important thing is that it's based on the principles of the Internet. Each of the set of interfaces is open. Anybody can adopt them. In most cases, they're already industry standard, and those others will work with the appropriate partners. By doing so, we have a strong commitment to open interfaces on the server side, which is, again, where the action is going to be, to build these business-critical applications across the net. Now, how do you know how you're doing against this sort of broad panoply of choices and direction that I've laid out? I've tried in one slide to sort of say, well, what's the waypoint? The waypoint is a progress point to the networked age. And you can read it. I mean, everybody in your company needs to be using email. You need to be using internal web stuff. The security policy has to be there. The bandwidth has to be there, and you have to manage it in an interesting way. There has to be a directory. The applications have to be integrated with it. And the various other enabling solutions all have to be present. Most customers, when they've used this, are struggling with getting all this deployed. This is ground zero in the networking industry today. Getting these things implemented is the next stage. If you will, these are the things that are on everyone's very short-term time horizon. And again, Novell has solutions in each of these cases. So to take you through, and a lot of people have commented about the strategy of the company, the history of the company, and you all know that. I don't need to go through that again. Where are we, and how do we grow our business? How do we make our company really go? And it turns out that I'm fortunate to be involved with a company that has most customers, most people in the industry are already customers. So we begin by saying, you're probably already a NetWare customer, and NetWare is going to be completely TCP/IP capable in the next 6 to 9 months. And everybody goes, that's a good idea. Along the way, our customers are deploying this directory called NDS. Many customers don't know this, by the way. They're aware that there's a directory, but they don't understand what it's good for. They use it for, say, sign-on. But once you have this directory, you're enabled in all sorts of the ways that I described. Many of you probably can already implement the demo that I showed without very much pain to you. By having these directory-enabled applications that I described and that you saw in the demo, and others that we will be announcing on a monthly basis over the next 6 months, we can deliver network-centric applications. The progress for our ManageWise business and our GroupWise business is all part of that. The Border Manager products are all integrated with that. And because we do dedicated kernels, because we do networking software that does networking and nothing else, our products are more, they have the abilities. They're more scalable, they're more reliable, they're more available. All of those abilities turn out to make sense if you have a best-of-breed approach. That story is sufficient to grow Novell's business, to restore its leadership position in key parts of the networking industry. But there's a twist, and the twist is Java. And by adding the ability to run these Java applications that I highlighted briefly for you, we can actually now become a significant mid-tier server vendor as well. So that's the stages. Those are the stages. That's how we put all this stuff together. So in taking the lead, we as a company are now going through the first phase, which is think of it as a stabilized phase. It's a learn how to things like management 101, deliver products on time, solve your customers' problems of one kind or another. That phase probably goes on for another 6 to 9 months until this next generation of products is shipping, customers are excited about it. And then there's an opportunity to drive and then an opportunity to thrive. The drive part is focusing on innovation in the standards world, driving new applications categories along the lines that I described, and really driving this network services ISP integration. There's enormous growth in those markets. Once we deliver on that, it's possible, for example, to get to this interesting ultimate destination that is very much Java-based. And the reason I say it'll take a couple of years for all of that to happen. And to the degree that leadership is inventing the future, Novell will lead and others will follow in this new world. So I appreciate you all spending the time. There are many, many, many of you who care deeply about the outcome of this, and I'm very well aware of that. I want to go back to my earlier theme, which is that the new face of networking has a human face. It has your face and my face on it. And hopefully I've taken you through a clear understanding of where networking is going and where Novell is going and what our product looks like. We will win because we have a product strategy in place that will reconcile the drive toward this new face of networking with the landscape, the reality that many of you deal with. As we showed in the demo, we are one of the companies on the verge of one of the most exciting new areas of network computing, Network computing is the interesting thing to be doing. I'm glad to be part of it, and I want to thank you all for being part of it, too. So thank you again.